I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know. It was quite a week for sports news, so let's get right to it. I'm joined by ESPN's Don Vannata Jr. and The Ringer's Claire McNear. Welcome back.
Hey, Bill.
It's great to be back.
Don, start us off, please.
Around lunchtime on Wednesday, ESPN's veteran analyst Dick Vitale got word that Hall of Fame coach Rick Pitino was out at Louisville. Pitino was the first head coaching casualty of an unprecedented federal criminal investigation into the corrupt world of college basketball that indicted 10 men, including four assistant coaches, on charges of fraud, bribery, and money laundering. And boy, was Dick Vitale surprised.
I am upset, frustrated, and disgusted to hear all what I'm hearing now. It's a shame. It's sleazy. It's no good. It's ugly. And it really just breaks my heart.
I love Dickie V, but this sounds awfully familiar.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Other commentators and some fans sounded just as shocked that big-time college basketball might be a sleazy underground marketplace where coaches, agents, boosters, runners, financial advisors, sneaker companies, and other con artists exchange cash and other treats to recruit top amateur athletes. For at least 30 years now, it's been an open secret that college basketball is a swampland. And repeatedly over the years, anytime a scandal hit Louisville basketball, Rick Pitino expressed a similar kind of stunned surprise. This is a coach who survived not one but two sex scandals. The most recent one, 2 years ago, when a book reported that potential Louisville recruits reportedly were consorting with paid escorts. Pitino said he was stunned by the allegations and knew nothing about it. And earlier this week, he said it again about the allegation that $100,000 was paid through Adidas to one of his top recruits. Only this time, the shock and surprise didn't save Pitino's job. Surprise and shock were also all over my Twitter feed Monday night after I tweeted out a photo of Jerry Jones kneeling with the Cowboys in Arizona before the playing of the national anthem. Wow, the Twitter people said. Never thought Jerry Jones would kneel for anybody. Again, why is there so much surprise about something so obvious? The president of the United States had attacked NFL players who protest during the playing of the national anthem. Like the players, they had their own reasons for joining arms during the national anthem, or even, like Jerry Jones, taking a knee. Unity, yes. Supporting their players, sure. Pushing back on President Trump's attacks on the game, absolutely. But these protests and the attacks are also very bad for the NFL's business. And to be blunt about it, some of the owners were also motivated to lock arms with their players to try to protect the NFL's $14 billion in annual revenues and the billions of dollars in equity in their clubs.
As far as Jerry Jones goes, it's a genius move on his part, if not an altruistic one. And I don't really see how anyone can be surprised by this, because it's just a very clever, perhaps even evil, way of turning this protest into something else. You know, it's the anthem protest now. It's about unity, whatever that means. And I think the odds are good that in the next couple weeks, if not this weekend, teams will agree sort of vaguely that the Constitution is important, that rights are important, and move on. And, you know, no one except maybe Donald Trump ever challenged that. So it's no surprise to me that Jerry Jones has kind of found a clever way out of this without actually addressing any of the issues.
It sounds to me as if you're suggesting that the original reason for the protest, which was police violence against black citizens, will be lost entirely in this yay, yay, let's all stand up for the flag kind of thing.
I think that's absolutely right. The Broncos put out a statement that was published on behalf of the players, they said, that went to great pains to say that the protest last weekend was basically about nothing. You know, they said this was absolutely not about the police. It was not about the country or patriotism or the military or the flag. They said it was just about unity, whatever that means.
Going back to Don's first point, is there any way that this basketball story can be construed as, hey, if we set up a system where the players are paid legally, we can cut out all these middlemen? Because that would be a good result to all of this, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, Bill. I agree. That's the problem. We have this underground system and all of these unscrupulous people profiting off of it, mm-hmm. and it's been going on forever. And the fact that people are surprised, you know, the NCAA really just allowed this to happen. And it took a U.S. attorney in New York and the FBI with that subpoena power to finally criminalize it and bring it out in the open. And a lot more dominoes are going to fall. But if players were paid, we wouldn't have to have this corrupt system.
In any other week, our next story would probably be leading the sports news. Claire, this is up to you.
Well, there was huge news out of Boston University this week where researchers announced that for the first time ever, they found a way of detecting the degenerative brain disease CTE in living patients. We don't know what exactly the test will involve or when it will be available, but this is just massive news for football players who will now have definitive proof of concussion-related trauma, perhaps before it's advanced to a more serious stage. That, in turn, has massive ramifications for the sport and for the NFL. How many players will keep going once they know the damage that's already been done? How many players will find out that they have CTE before they even get to the NFL and just decide not to go to the pros at all? How many parents are going to let their kids keep playing when they can see very, very explicitly, like they never could before, what's happening? I think this is the beginning of the end for football. What do you guys think?
It could be. I agree with Claire that it is a revolutionary advance. The problem with the CTE data and something that the NFL has been able to rely on is it's been a small sample and it's been a self-selecting sample. Now, as Claire points out, there will be thousands of people who are curious while they're still on this earth, while they're still playing football and drawing a paycheck for it, who can find out whether they have CTE symptoms. So it is a huge breakthrough and bad news for the NFL in the long term.
Claire, I think your questions are all good ones. Another question occurs to me, and that is, will there be players who say they'd prefer not to know, they'd prefer not to take the test, the way some people do with various other conditions and diseases now, when knowing doesn't mean that they can find a good way to deal with it? And that will be another interesting thing to find out when this test is actually available to people.
Absolutely. And even now you have players who say that they understand the risks and they're just going to keep playing anyway, that it's their choice to do that. And it absolutely is. I think an unpleasant question that's been in the background for many years, though, is just how many football players really understand the full risk of CTE. Mm-hmm. How many know how likely it is that they'll get this terrible disease? You read about so many players who say, oh, my God, I had no idea that I could get CTE from anything other than just major concussions. And I think with this test soon enough, we're going to have an answer to this.
All right. I'm going to take advantage of my opportunity here to strike a lighter note on this day of very serious topics. I want to salute the Minnesota Twins. This week, they became the first Major League Baseball team to qualify for the postseason immediately after a year in which they lost more than 100 games. Baseball, of course, has been around for more than 100 years. We can still look at each other from game to game and say, hey, that's never happened before. I've never seen that. To quote my old friend Tim Kirkchen, that's the beauty of baseball, something he always says. It's one of the beauties of baseball, at least. Would I be off base to say baseball leads the league in providing opportunities to see something you've never seen before in any given season, maybe even on any particular game night?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I'm biased, of course. But, I mean, you had the Dodgers this year who were on pace for their own historic season and most wins ever. They were absolutely on pace for it. And then they just completely fell apart in August for no clear reason. There were no injuries. You know, nothing could explain it. And, of course, now they're going to the postseason and may do very well there. But they almost had their own historic August in terms of just losses. So it's just amazing that we can see all of that in a single season.
What I'm really struck by with what's happened with the Twins for going from 100 losses to the playoffs, it strikes a little bit like the NFL and parity, the old Pete Rozelle parity rule that, you know, if you have four or five wins or even three wins in an NFL season, the system is designed to give the fans of that particular losing team a chance the next year. And we never see that in baseball, as you pointed out. It's pretty extraordinary. So maybe parity is coming to baseball after all.
For reasons that we may not ever be able to understand. But right. What fun to be able to stick up for the former national pastime in this season of discontent for football especially. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been ESPN's Don Van Nonna Jr. and The Ringer's Claire McNear. Thank you, both of you, very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks so much for having me.